At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Joseph Sternberg. He writes political economics. He's based in London for the Wall Street Journal editorial board. His most recent column, "We will come to Europe, but right now we're in China." Joe was many years in Hong Kong observing the miracle of the Chinese economy rising. And there was always a promise that was implicit as these billion people gained purchase in the 21st century. There's always the promise of the consumer. Think what you can sell. I remember Caterpillar, the large earth-moving company, exploring its franchise into China because we're going to be able to sell to all these building municipalities. And then to dream of Starbucks or other franchises in China with a billion people to draw upon. Just think what the future brings. And then, Joe, a very good evening to you. Your most recent column identifies a missing story that I didn't realize wasn't there until you concentrated on it. The story of the Chinese consumer. Where is he? Where is she? Good evening to you.
Hey, John. Yeah, I mean, this is becoming the major problem with the Chinese economy on a bunch of dimensions. Is, you know, this is exactly the question you raise. Where is the Chinese consumer? So, I mean, the backdrop to this is that economies around the world are in trouble. China's economy is in particular trouble. I mean, we've had a raft of economic data out earlier this week, pointing to sky-high youth unemployment. Industrial production is slowing, consumer confidence is falling, credit growth is declining, which goes along with a plunge in business investment, especially in the private sector, which is the productive part of the Chinese economy. And I mean, this is just a total disaster for China, because one of the things that is happening is that this rising middle class that should be growing more prosperous in such a large developing economy is really faltering. And I mean, it's happening for a bunch of reasons. It's happening because of the dynamic zero COVID lockdowns that President Xi Jinping keeps imposing to try to keep the pandemic under control. It's happening because of the policy crackdown on the real estate market, which is starting to dent property prices. And remember that in China, property is the main way that middle class households try to save and invest their household wealth. They're not putting the money into 401ks or stock investments or anything like that. That's all property. So if you start messing around with the property market, that's going to have an effect on household consumption. And so, I mean, that is starting to all go terribly wrong for the Chinese economy. And that then is starting to have implications for China's place in the world, because a big part of the rationale for Western countries' economies cultivating such a close trading and political and diplomatic relationship with China has been the desire to access this enormous marketplace that promised the world 1.4 billion new consumers. And yet Beijing seems to be doing everything it can perversely to suppress that consumption right now. So, I mean, this is a major economic threat to China. It's a major economic threat to the world. But it's also, I think, more of a diplomatic headache in the making for Beijing than they realize.
You identify property, the property market, as a way of judging how the consumer is doing in China. Because, as you say, the middle class's primary investment outlet is property. Well, they've bet on a losing horse. Is this compounding the fact that the consumer is not participating in the way we understood, buying globally, the consumer is now fascinated or obsessed with getting his or her money back, having paid for an apartment that doesn't exist.
Yeah, I think that absolutely is a big part of the problem. I mean, it's true in most countries, including the U.S., that the family home is the single biggest asset that the household owns. And so I think that it's not terribly unusual just in that very limited sense that you would have households that are dependent on property for a large portion of their household wealth, and any kind of general sense of economic well-being that that family might have that will then encourage more consumption today. What is unusual in China has always been the lack of any other alternatives. I mean, certainly the home in America might be the family's largest single asset, won't be the only asset. There will also be all of the retirement accounts like the 401k, you know, the bank account, any of the you know, the financial savings or investment products. And that is the part of the equation that is missing in China. And, you know, that goes along with the fact that the government is growing more and more hostile to the productive private sector that could actually be creating investment opportunities for the middle class. I mean, the big picture here is that China has to find some way to pivot out of its emphasis and overinvestment and overlending to unproductive state-owned, you know, industries that do nothing but create all of this excess unproductive capacity in the economy. And you need to be shifting capital and resources into the productive private sector. And so what is Xi Jinping doing? Well, he is in the middle of a big crackdown on productive private businesses, especially in the tech sector. Beijing has made no mystery of the fact that they want to consolidate more of the economy in the hands of state-owned enterprises that will be more amenable to Xi's political control. And then perversely, you know, part of the rotation that they're doing to try to get out of all of this debt that they have in the economy is cracking down on property-related debt, which is the form of it that is so bound up in household wealth and well-being and the propensity to consume. So it's not like they're cracking down on over-leverage among state-owned commodities companies, you know, where they could do some good. They're trying to crack down on over-leverage in the area where it will directly weigh on exactly the kind of domestic consumption that they should be trying to encourage.
All parts connect to Europe, and Joe's column most recently connects us to Germany. Surprisingly, I started reading this as another conversation about Xi Jinping and his unusual approach to capitalism. But now I learned that the Germans have been debating, are they over-dependent, dependent? Do they need to be dependent on China? Joe, is this something, again, that matches the disappointment of Angela Merkel's time in office? She didn't notice how dependent they were on Russia for energy, and they didn't notice how dependent they were on China for revenue. They didn't notice it.
Well, two things are going on here. I mean, first is the Russian war in Ukraine and Germany's embarrassing energy dependence on Russia is prompting people in Germany and indeed across Europe, I think, to rethink their economic relationships with other autocrats. And China is going to be at the top of that list. So you're seeing a much broader reevaluation of the economic relationship between Europe and China, and especially between Germany and China. And an unavoidable part of that conversation has been the realization that has been growing in recent years. The promise of the China market has not been fulfilled. That, you know, the people expected that if they got into that market on the ground floor, that Beijing would be committed to constantly expanding market access for foreign companies, and that also you would have more and more Chinese moving into the consuming middle class, where they would become customers for Western companies that were operating there. And what we're discovering is that that has not been the case. So, I mean, certainly the Germans are discovering that it would be very costly for them to try to sever their trading and investment relationship with China at one go. But they're also discovering that these debates are informed by the fact that even the almighty auto industry in Germany is discovering that the Chinese domestic market is not expanding now in the way that they had hoped that it would for them. The sales just aren't there. That's kind of the connection between this phenomenon I identified with the stagnating domestic consumption in China and Beijing's diplomatic clout abroad. Because if China can't offer that enormous marketplace to foreign companies, what is the point of foreign governments coddling Beijing's various neuroses on political issues in exchange for access to that market?
I want to talk about the philosophy of these two unlikely pair, China and Germany. We're told that China has an export-dominated economy. For many years, that's been my lesson and my conversations with you. Export, 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 build up enormous supply of cash and dominate the story because you've got the cash and because you're the factory that supplies America with its gadgets. But Germany, they don't do gadgets. They do high-end engineering and beautiful automobiles that may now not be so dominant because of electric vehicles. But in any event, Germany also has an export-only model. Are either Germany or China understanding that they've taken themselves as far as they can and those days are gone and they have to change their models?
Well, I think that there has always been a big debate about this issue in Germany and this question about whether they were too dependent on exports and whether they ought to be stimulating more domestic consumption. But I do think that the situations are somewhat different because you can make an argument that a lot of Germany's export dominance is market driven. I mean, the fact is they have industries that are native to Germany that are very efficient at producing a bunch of high value exports. Now, I mean, we're discovering that a certain amount of that was built on a faulty energy policy that depended on very cheap energy imports from Russia that won't always be there. But I think that you can argue that there is much more of a market rationale for Germany exporting in the way that it does. Whereas China, so much of it has been policy-led. It has been so many policy choices that Beijing has made over the years, specifically to pursue an export-led growth strategy. And then really this failure to come up with any kind of policy pivot out of that into the domestic consumption as they started creating more of a middle class. And so I think that of the two, I mean, the scale is quite different, but also the policy background is different. And I think that the degree of policy distortion that has made the Chinese economy operate the way that it has is the big thing that should be concerning us a lot more than Germany's trade balance at the moment.
I'm speaking with Joseph Sternberg, a member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He's based in London. He writes political economics. We've been discussing the Chinese economy, which is in terrible shape. If America was in this kind of shape, we'd use the word depression routinely. 20% unemployment for the young people coming out of universities and colleges. That in itself is a dark future for those young people and suggests that whatever Xi Jinping thinks he's imposing on the Chinese people, it won't last. He will age out. He is mortal. And those young people will remember this moment in time when they did all of their studies, they took all of those risks, and they come out and getting in a queue to find a job that is not in their specialty. We're going to turn now to Europe, not just Germany, but all of Europe, in a heat wave, in a drought, and without adequate energy resources for the months ahead because of Ukraine crisis. I'm John Batchelor.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.